Just Not Good Enough with Chaz House on FUBAR Radio.
Hi there, everybody. I'd like to welcome Amy McDonald to Just Not Good Enough, who's my interviewee, although it's not quite an interview. It's just more of a little bit of a fireside chat. Amy is the founder of Head Torch, and I'm going to go straight in with that. And just can you tell me a little bit about what Head Torch is, why it exists, what you do? And it's you founded it, so why did you do that?
Yes, well, so I've been working in workplace mental health now for about 15 years, and that's really what Head Torch focuses on, encouraging, enabling organisations to be proactive in their approach to workplace mental health.
That's good, because that's exactly what this program's about.
Excellent.
That's helpful.
Excellent.
Yes, yeah. Good start.
Yeah. So, what we find is many organizations are more on the reactive side rather than the proactive side. So, so we're coming at it from a different angle, I suppose, than perhaps some others. So, a little bit about how it began.
Yeah,
would that be helpful?
I'm really interested because
your
proactivity is a lot of people react, a lot of businesses react to it because they feel they have to. Whereas actually, what you're trying to do is get on the front foot and get people to think about it before they actually have to, in a way. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, no, please.
Yeah.
We've got as long as you want, so.
Fire away.
Yeah. I mean, I've got to be at home by 7.
I should be finished the first question by then.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. Excellent. By the way, for the listeners, it's probably about 11 o'clock in the morning at the moment. But anyway, go on. Carry on. Sorry.
So my background is in theatre and education, amongst other things, as well as coaching and mediation and business and all sorts of stuff.
So is that teaching?
It's using drama as a tool to educate. Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. So I'd started working in the business world prior to that worked more in the community, young people, people with learning disabilities and so on.
It plays to my heart because I don't know if you know, but I'm a trustee of a theatre and a college that looks after severely disabled and handicapped kids.
Well, who knew? I didn't know that.
Did you not? No. Yeah. And I mean, this isn't about me, but those two jobs are just absolutely fantastic. Yeah. I love them, particularly the disabled kids one. I mean, the work that this organisation, National Star, I'm going to shout it out, does is just extraordinary and heartwarming. And oh dear, brings a tear to your eye even think about it.
Yeah.
Sorry. Carry on.
So basically, I'd started working in the business world, initially looking more at communication skills, those transferable skills that we use in theatre, and bringing those into the business world. And anyway, somebody that I'd worked with previously said, "Would I come and create a piece of interactive theatre, a learning piece?" With adults with long-term mental health issues. So I said, sure, I can do that. And it was quite nice because what was happening was it was kind of marrying up my past with my present. So it was kind of going back to the community, working with people in the community, but bringing that work into the workplace.
How did people react to that? Sorry, I'm bouncing around a bit here. But
who, the audience or the
people that you're
that I was working
involving
with?
In? Yeah.
Well, it was my first step, if you like, into understanding mental ill health and understanding that whole wider picture, if you like. And because I said to the person who was bringing me in, she said, so I'd like you to work this group and I'd like you to create a piece and take it out to places like the job centre and doctor surgeries, but really, so it was educating the staff in those areas, right, and supermarkets. So I said, sure, and get that done, bish, bash, bosh, in, you know, probably about 3 months. Anyway, I started working with the group and I realised that's just not going to happen. And I'm
going to,
because the people in the group needed 3 months just to develop skills, 3 months just to build confidence, 3 months just to...
So this is your group, not the group you're going to be working with. This is your group of people that you're bringing together to deliver this initiative. Right. Okay.
It was the group of adults with long-term mental health issues.
I'm really interested in this. So the people with the mental health issues were the ones who you are working with to develop something with an organisation.
To develop a piece of interactive theatre that we are then going to take into the organisation.
Wow.
So it's myself, another theatre professional, and volunteer adults with long-term mental health issues. And so it's upskilling, it's doing all those things that drama does, which is build confidence, build communication skills, build that, it creates really good team building stuff. Yeah.
It's really
so
powerful.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you go to the theatre, which I do a lot, and I want to be moved emotionally, so I want to go in feeling something and come out feeling something else. Yeah. And if you can do that with people who at work and having to work with and around and communicate with and so on with people with mental health issues, that can be far more powerful, I think, than sitting behind a desk looking at a video or in a lecture theatre listening to somebody speak.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's so now, fast forward right to now, we don't do a whole piece of theatre that we stop and start and is interactive, but we do still create a fictional employee with all our clients and embed that fictional employee into their workplace using their language, wearing their overalls or whatever it is, to bring the issues alive and for different points of
learning. Is this a real
learning.
Person? I mean, it's a fictional character, but is it a real person acting out that character?
Yes, we get an actor.
Oh, do you? Yeah. Right, okay.
We bring in an actor to bring that character alive. So you follow a journey, and so you're learning through that. And the reason why it's so integral is because it's about head and heart, and that's what you get from stories.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what you get from drama.
I'm going to divert a little bit because it's a little story. I once watched. We were at work. And they're teaching us how to do interviews. And they've got one of these educational films based on work. And this young lad who was just, he hadn't been in the organisation very long. And he had to interview this woman for a job. And they designed it. This is an actress who came in and she dressed herself up like a Mrs. Mop, so she had overalls and a hair thingy on. And she walked through the door. She slammed open the door. And said, "What the fuck do you think you're doing with my staff?" And the poor young lad didn't know where to put himself, but he handled it brilliantly. And I mean, what a fantastically powerful experience, because he suddenly, okay, it's make-believe, but he's put in that situation, which is a really awkward one. And somebody may actually do that at some point, come in and not necessarily in an interview, but as an employee. And do that. So theatre could, I've never really thought about this before, but theatre works fantastically well in business.
Yeah. It's you can capture so much in terms of learning the impact of behaviours, of attitude, of words, of tone. You can capture that in like 90 seconds that somebody else might take 2 hours, 3 hours to explain.
But even so then, you haven't got it, have you?
Yeah,
because
you're
right. You said earlier about hearts and minds.
Yeah. So the important thing is that the drama is it gets you emotionally. So you feel perhaps angry. You feel frustrated. You feel concerned about the person that you're watching, the fictional employee. That is what moves you. Yes, emotion
is to move,
isn't it?
So, yes.
Yeah.
And is that what that means?
Yeah, emotion.
I just didn't know that. That's ridiculous. I should have known that. But you must get resistance, though, sometimes when you're in an organisation. Any change has resistance. Some people might just think of it as a little bit of fun, we're just having a little play about today. But do people welcome it, embrace it, and get as much out of it as they should?
So, yeah, I mean, I would say that the majority of people that go through the programs that we deliver, and we work at every level within an organization. So we're working with the senior team, we work with people leaders, we work with frontline and direct staff. And obviously everybody's going to come at it from a different place, and that's okay. And sometimes it lands better, you know, land better with one person than with another person. But what we find is that when you have an organization that's wanting to go on that, what is essentially cultural change,
yeah,
right? So we're looking to enable organizations to create a mentally healthy culture. When organizations go on that journey seriously, then there tends to be a tipping point of when enough people have that knowledge and understanding that the cynics are silenced, or at least quietened. There will always be cynics.
Yeah.
That's the way of the world, unfortunately. But at least the majority, there needs to, the aim is really for within a culture for it to become unacceptable to stigmatize, for it to become unacceptable to use offensive language, you know, for it to become unacceptable to ignore somebody that you notice is struggling. So that's the aim, is to create that wholly open and supportive culture.
How long does it take? I mean, you know, you get, I mean, I know, sorry, it's a ridiculous question, but you get a call from somebody and says, right, come in, I'm really interested in what you're doing, come in, I want to start to change the culture. You know, as you said, it takes time for those cynics to be quietened. I just, you know, is there a, I mean, there isn't an average timeline, but I mean, are we talking months, years? How long does it take?
Yeah, it's a long journey, and it's not just about bringing the fictional employee in. There's a whole load of other stuff.
Of course there is. Yes.
So we'd like to work with the ideal is that we would work with the senior team first, because if you don't have buy-in from the senior team, it's very difficult along the way, because whoever's sort of you know, championing this further down the organization is going to come across obstacles, because they will come across some resistance. So it's really important that we get to work with the senior team first.
How do you do that? Because I mean, I understand that, because if the behavior of the senior team influences the behavior of everybody, because they see a successful person behaves like that, therefore I need to behave like that.
Yeah.
So how do you get them on board? Because I bet, you know, they've got competing pressures of,
absolutely,
we need to get this delivery out. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, I need to be nice to you. You know, and sometimes those two don't gel.
It's about, the piece of work we tend to do with them is a real deep dive into all their data. So we will gather, you know, results from, say, engagement surveys. We'll get all their absenteeism results. We'll find out whether mental ill health is even...
you know, registered.
We will look at any kind of information from exit interviews. We have our own index so that we can do a sort of online audit, if you like, of where the organization is at. So it really gives them a kind of line in the sand as to this is where we're at. Then we do one-to-one interviews with the senior team. Mm-hmm. So this is all before we've even stepped in the room with them. So it's a real kind of, we understand as much as we can really about the business and where it is before we even step in the room, and then we work with that team. When we do, it's usually a half day face to face with the senior team, so we work with them to
individually or as a group.
as a group,
right, okay.
So before that we've done
the interviews, one-to-one
interviews. So we really kind of hit the ground running when we meet them, and we're sort of hitting them between the eyeballs in terms of the facts and figures, and this is what your absenteeism rate is, this is the this is what it's saying about reasons for absence, or that's not recorded, or whatever the information is. And then we'll give them scores for the index as well, our Head Torch index, and so it really, they get a kind of firm understanding of it. And one of the, and we go through case studies, and we have a guest speaker, and we then, what we've, from those one-to-one interviews, we collate all the good stuff that's happening, all the challenges that they've got, and also the vision, so where they want to go. So we collate all the comments that they've made, and we play it back to them. So they're all there in black and white for people to see and read and understand, and then we work through what are they going to do, first of all, to tackle the challenges. And one of the...
Do you get eyes rolling at that point? You know, I mean, I can just see the old finance director going, oh, for God's sakes, another HR something or other. You know.
No, it doesn't tend to be eyes rolling. It's more penny dropping, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. Because often the perhaps more cynical in the room might think that mental health is something over there that's not integral to the workplace, whereas what we're showing them is that it's absolutely fundamental and that it's about energizing your workforce. If mental health means energy,
yeah,
and energy equals performance,
because it doesn't have to be a mental health illness, does it? It can just be about motivation and people enjoying themselves and wanting to come to work, and therefore productivity goes up. So yeah, you've got the makings of almost a business case, haven't
yeah.
you?
Oh, yeah, we totally do. We go through all the business case, so the financial, legal, ethical reasons why. And one of the models we like to use also with the senior team is the integrated approach model. So that's showing you an organization that they need to be taking a three-pronged approach to this. So they need to promote it. So that's your, you know, that's your yoga sessions and your fruit bowls and your inspirational talks and things like that. They yeah. need to be supporting it, i.e. have some form of confidential employee counselling available when somebody does become well. And the third leg is protect. And that's about being proactive in doing something about what could be or what is causing stress within your organisation. And it's about upskilling. So that's the learning and development for people to understand, demystify mental health, know how to spot signs, know how to be confident to have conversations, know that doing nothing is not an option. It's not okay to, if somebody fell down and broke their leg, you wouldn't leave them lying there for 3 months. So if you notice your colleague is struggling mentally, you don't leave them for 3 months. Yeah. Doing nothing is not an option. So that is often, the penny drops often that, oh, actually this is much bigger than I thought. I thought it was this thing over there that might be quite nice to do, and other organisations seem to be talking about it and doing it. And what we're saying is actually it needs to be front and centre. It needs to be a strategic priority. And if it's not a strategic priority, you're doing your employees down, you're doing your teams down, and it's certainly not going to do anything good for the organisation. Mm. So making it front and centre is important.
I love that, the promote, support, protect.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. I think, you know, that sort of covers it, doesn't
it
really?
Does. And you ask any organisation, and more often than not, they're doing quite a lot. They've got a lot in support.
Yes.
When
yes.
you're ill, we'll pick you up.
Yeah,
oh, thanks
and,
very
and,
much.
And the promote yes. as well. They're all and doing their well-being initiatives.
Yes, yeah. yeah. So there's a lot in those two, but it's that third one. So, for example, we work with lots of different types of organisations. We work with a large manufacturing organisation. They make humongous trucks. And we worked with their senior team, and from that, they realised that actually the key stressors was all to do with supply chain. So on the face of it, you think, well, that's not mental health. But of course it's mental health. If yeah. that's causing stress amongst an awful lot of your employees, it's a key stressor. So what they did was we worked with them on the Thursday. As a result of that, they created a special task force just looking at supply. So by the time my colleague went back in to see them on the Monday, that task force was in place. They brought people back from retirement. They'd taken people off their regular day jobs.
What did they do?
They just created this hub, if you like, who were just specifically focusing on supply, getting what they need, right?
So did they change their processes, their procedures, and
well, they
the
as
way
a, yeah,
that happened?
Yeah, well, they were changing their focus. They were changing the way they were looking at and approaching the supply issues that they had. So we obviously don't get involved in the nitty-gritty no. of that. That's not our bit. Our bit is to say, you've got to do this because yeah. this is the bit.
Would you then go back in and re-measure them, re-head torch,
yep.
Index them
yep.
and say, yeah, that worked or not?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just the kind of beginning, if you like. So that's the senior team. You get hopefully you have, you've got at least one, if not more, champions within the senior team who then are the sort of go-to for the rest of the organisation in terms of that's the person in the senior team who's championing this, who says, yep, this is important. That's the one who's leading it.
That is crucial.
Yeah.
It?
And then it's upskilling. people leaders and then frontline. Yeah. So it's a whole journey, and then it's initiatives, and it's the creation of a well-being group. So it's a whole range.
I'm going to add another P to your three, actually, which is prevent.
Yeah.
Because...
Well, that's within protect, to be honest. That is.
Okay.
Protecting.
I think
it's
a better
twofold
word, but then I would, wouldn't I?
It's a nice, certainly a very nice word.
It's just because when you were talking, I thought of the NHS, right? And I mean, I'm on statins, right? Because I've got a potential cholesterol issue because of my age, which is prevention, and it's obviously helping me, but it's also helping the organisation, the NHS, because I'm not. You know, I'm not going to be going in there with a heart attack or whatever else that might happen.
Absolutely.
And so there's one thing, though, that there's people in danger that might fall through the gaps on this. So I'm thinking of the people who've really got, you know, relatively severe mental health problems. And, you know, and as I have sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, going to a well-being initiative when you're not feeling good is actually the worst thing that you can do. Frankly, because you really don't want to do anything. You want to go to work, and even then you probably shouldn't be at work. Do your job and go home to escape it all. Yeah, support. Yes, nice to have support, but frankly, when I'm feeling shit, I don't actually want to talk to anybody, you know. And then protect and prevent. Well, it's too late because I'm already there. So there's these people, isn't there, that are stuck in the ether because of the way that they feel at that time. And I just wonder how can you give them permission, if you like, to talk about their condition within the framework of what you're doing, which I think is absolutely excellent.
So, it's about creating a culture where, A, if you're unwell, you feel able to talk to at least somebody in the organisation and just say, you know what, I'm not very well at the moment. But equally, it's about, because as you know, if you're unwell, sometimes you don't know it yourself.
No.
It needs somebody from the outside to say, hey, you know what, Amy, I've noticed that you're a bit more tired than usual. I've noticed that you were a bit snappy. I've noticed that. So the more specific you can be.
It gives them an opportunity to talk about it if they want to.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's then saying, I've noticed this. How are you? What's going on? How about a chat? How about we go for a walk? You know, it's about creating that culture that where, as I say, you're proactive. So you're proactive when you notice someone's unwell, and equally if you are unwell and you know you're unwell, you feel safe to talk about it.
Yeah,
because it's all about feeling safe.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard that expression before. Yeah. Somebody used
psychological safety.
I think it might have been you actually.
Might have been, yeah.
Well, yeah, let's say it is you. Definitely it's you. And that helps, because what you actually want to be able to do when you're psychologically feeling safe and actually you're feeling probably a little bit more open about things rather than having closed down because you're going through a bad time, is it's that point you really need to say to somebody, you know, hold your hand up and say, look, you may have noticed, but 3 weeks ago, I felt absolutely terrible. You know, everybody accused me of being a grumpy old git, which quite often happens, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because people misread it.
Yeah.
And it's getting to that point to give them that permission. And I really struggle with how you can do that when you get people who are cynical, even at the top level, who still don't believe it because they see pressures on profits and pressures on costs and all that sort of stuff.
I mean, it's about educating, isn't it? It's about educating. I mean, one of the basic questions that we ask often at the beginning of sessions, and that dates right back to when I was doing the full interactive theatre pieces, was hands up, who's got mental health? Now, back in the...
Did you say it exactly like that?
Yeah.
Not who's got a mental health issue, but who's got mental health?
Who's got mental health? Hands up, who's got mental health?
Well, they should all do it.
Of course. Everybody should do that. But when I first started on this, you'd literally see people squirm and like,
close
you
up.
Know, close up and, oh, not, no, well, I don't.
I do, but I'm not prepared to tell you.
Yeah. So it's getting that message across that, of course, we've all got mental health, just like physical health. We come as one. If we didn't have mental health, we wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
So it's getting that knowledge and understanding across that because we all have physical health, we all have mental health as well as physical health, either or of those can become unwell. They can be well and they can be unwell. And physical. They change all the time, and that's okay. Yes. It's good, it's bad, it's brilliant, it's amazing, it's rubbish, it is whatever it is.
Yeah.
But it changes all the time.
Yes, it does.
And that's why it's so important we're able to look out for and support
and
one another.
I agree entirely.
So it's upskilling, but it's also one of the things we do in one of our programs is we encourage people to think about what stops people talking to someone who they notice is struggling. Right?
Oh, and right. I thought you were going to say what stops people talking about when they're feeling bad, but you're not. No, this is about, yeah.
Yeah, the other way around.
That can be far more powerful, can't it?
Yeah.
You just go, you know, it's almost like you're metaphorically putting a shoulder around them.
Yeah. Well, and so what people say is, well, it's time, or they're the person they notice is unwell is at a more senior level than them, or they don't get on with that person, or they're not feeling well themselves, or right. So there's a whole list that they come up with, and
outside stuff as well. Because I mean, financial pressures, family pressures, you know, they might be going through a bad relationship with their partner, kids are playing up, there's all sorts of stuff, isn't there?
Yeah, for the person who's unwell, that could be, but yes. I'm taking it from the other perspective. So if you notice that I'm unwell, what might stop you having a conversation with me? And it might be because you're really busy. It might be because you're just going to a meeting. It might be because you don't like me. It might be, you know, it could be a whole bunch of reasons.
It could be because I don't know how
exactly
to do it.
You think you don't know how. You're scared.
Yes.
That I might burst into tears.
Yes.
You're scared that I might snap at you
in the middle of an office.
Yeah.
And you're trying to be kind, and then you know you get rejected, and I shouldn't. And then that makes me feel bad because I've you know gone up and tried to help, and they've just told me to piss off or something. Yeah. You know, not in those words, but. Yeah. So is that the bit that you train and teach as well?
Yeah. From that discussion, from that list that they create, so all of these things that we've just talked about, the question is, so who is the focus on with all of these things? You're busy, you're scared. Who's the focus on? It's on the person who's well, not the person who's unwell.
Yeah.
So it's about turning it round so that we understand, actually, if I fell down and broke my leg,
I'd know.
You would, yes, but you wouldn't hesitate.
You. No,
exactly.
Of course I'd help you.
You
yeah.
wouldn't hesitate. Yeah. So it's exactly the same thing. And interestingly,
Depends whether I liked you or not.
Yeah. I've just read Claudia Hammond's The Keys to Kindness.
I saw her at the Cheltenham Literature Festival last year. Was it the Science Festival? I can't remember. Yeah. But
she's amazing.
Stunning. And I met her afterwards because I deliberately tried to bump into her because I want to go on to her show All in the Mind, right?
Yeah.
And I then sent her an email and she hasn't responded. So if you're out there, bloody answer it.
You know where he is.
Yeah.
So within that book, she's been part of one of the largest studies on kindness worldwide with something like 60,000 people participated in it. It's phenomenal. But one of the key reasons why people don't offer that bit of kindness, but offer that help, is for fear of getting it wrong. Isn't that interesting? For fear of getting it wrong, as in, oh, I thought you were, do you need a hand with that? No, I don't need a hand with that. I got it wrong. But actually, the majority of us would like it if somebody says, oh, do you want a hand with that? Oh, no, it's okay. But thanks for offering.
Yes, but that's the normal reaction, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? But I thought that was a really interesting fact of why we don't just be kind.
Yeah.
You know?
But the fear of getting it wrong, you see that? I mean, this show is called Just Not Good Enough. I mean, that's what that is all about. Yeah. So even the people who are with their mental condition feeling that they're not good enough. Yeah. Actually, even the people who don't have that fear that they're just not good enough because they're going to get something wrong. It's bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, it is bizarre.
You do some work with Glasgow University.
Mm.
How did that come about? And because it obviously plays into, I guess, your theatre and drama activities or past, if you like, and then, and what has that sort of led on to, really?
Well, the very first program that we developed was an online program with a drama that runs through it that we that I created. We have expert speakers on it. We have lots of questions on it, lots of information, sort of spots on it. And
is this still going now?
It is still going, yeah. But we use it more, I suppose, now as a kind of refresher within organisations, that, that online programme.
But can I get at it through the Head Torch website?
No, you would have to contact us.
But it is readily available.
It is available. And so we that was trialled by the University of Glasgow, the psychology department, the University of Glasgow, to look at its impact in terms of empathy levels. And so it was proven that it increases empathy levels, which is great. So that's really our relationship with them. We still, when we pre-COVID, we did conferences, and the university would be involved in those conferences as well, which
do they
is
work?
Lovely. What?
Conferences.
Do they work?
Hmm.
Well, what do you mean, do they work?
Well, I know it's a bit of a stupid question, wasn't it? But, you know, I go to conferences and you hear somebody talk and, yeah, it's inspirational, but it doesn't actually make me go back necessarily and change what I've heard at work. It's the work that you do.
Yeah.
In the workplace where you're working with the team. It's not just one person coming back and says, oh, I was at a conference the other day and I heard this. Yeah. Wouldn't it be a good idea?
Yeah. I mean, I think conferences are good for... I personally enjoy conferences just for learning, really. And some of that might be for me personally, and some of it might be actually that would be useful to integrate here or there within back in, you know, within Head Torch. So I think it depends on the... Depends on the conference.
Yeah, I suppose
really?
It does. And your attitude to it as well, actually. Yeah. Maybe not going back and saying, I'm going to change the world, but just change your own behaviour. So you almost lead by example as a result of it.
Yeah. Well, we haven't done a conference since before COVID. Now, alternatively, we do our monthly podcast, of which you will be.
Yes, I am.
Soon.
Yes, I'm coming on it. I've got to think up a question, haven't I, for everybody?
You do.
When do you need that?
Oh, this time.
Oh, thank God for that. Yes, it's was it January now? You know, it's not.
It's December.
yes, it's December. Yeah. You talked a little bit about kindness, right? And I love kindness. Mm. And just today, driving here, you know, I flashed somebody to let them out, and they put their hazard warning lights on for a couple of seconds, and I felt really good about that. And then I feel really angry if somebody doesn't say thank you. Mm. And I love the feeling good bit, but I don't like the anger bit. And I'm trying to manage that by saying the only person who's expending energy here is me. They don't give a toss, you know, because they've just not bothered to do it. But it's so easy to be kind, isn't it? Even at work, it's so, so easy to be kind.
It doesn't take much.
It takes nothing.
No, even, you know, things like... I need to let somebody go because they've got a hospital appointment. I need to let somebody go because, you know, their father has dementia and they need to be there right now.
Yeah.
You know, so it kindness doesn't cost anything, and it goes a long way to developing trusting relationships, doesn't it?
Yeah. But you know, if you notice that somebody's feeling bad, then just, you know, go and make them a drink. You know that they drink tea or they drink coffee. If you're going to get one, well, just put it on their desk. You don't even need to say anything. And suddenly, you know, you will get that. You could see a physical lift in that person's demeanour.
Yeah, so one of the things that five things really that we talk about a lot and engage people a lot with in our sessions are what are known as the five ways of well-being, which you may have come across. I'm not sure.
Maybe I better say yes, hadn't I?
So it's connect, which is who and how we connect with other people. Learn, so what are you learning in work, out of work? Staying active, what are you doing to stay active? Notice, which is about being in the moment. So for some people that might be meditation and yoga. For my colleague, it's riding his motorbike.
Dangerous game, that. You've got to be alert when you do that.
Absolutely,
you?
You've got to be in the moment.
Yes,
you can't think of anything else.
No, you can't.
You have to be absolutely in the moment.
No.
And the fifth one is give. So that's what do you do to give back? And that, of course, is really about kindness. So, and it can be anything from giving a compliment to somebody right through to running an ultra marathon. So what are you doing to be kind? What are you doing to be good to others? And the research shows that, again, more Claudia Hammond stuff, that
she's good, isn't she?
She's good. Yeah. That the more we give, the more we're kind, the more we get from it.
Yeah.
So it's a two-way, very much a two-way streak. And there's lots of research out there that shows that exactly that. You know, they give people a challenge at work to do five kind things, and the people on the receiving end feel good for actually a shorter length of time than the people who gave.
Yeah.
So they feel the benefits of that in their well-being for longer by being good to somebody else.
Yeah, yeah. You see, I mean, my particular mental health condition is I actually don't like people being kind to me.
Okay, I'll remember that.
Yeah, you can be as nasty as you like. I don't like that either, actually. But kindness is fine. It's doing things for me, so helping me out. You know, and even sometimes, and this gets down, because I've written a book, it's in my book, that I will not, I feel uncomfortable even with a mate buying me a beer occasionally. And I just think that's ridiculous. Why do I feel like that? Because I'm denying them the opportunity of buying me a beer, apart from being kind to me. You know, and I know I'm going to buy one back and do the same thing, but I would, you know, I'll always get the first round because that's how it is, you know, that's how I do it. And I don't understand why. I love being kind, but I find it difficult accepting kindness. I think there's something about macho men, actually, I think, particularly in finance, where we just, you know, I don't need any help, I can do this. You know, am I okay? No, go away, I'm getting on with this, I can do this on my own. And my wife says the same thing, actually, when I'm trying to do something. She says, can I help? And says, nope, I can do it. You think I'm an idiot, don't you? You know, I mean, ridiculously behaviour.
Yeah, I think...
Does that happen at work as well?
Absolutely, and actually one of the things that we try to... Well, that we do talk about is vulnerability, and we like to take more of the Brené Brown approach to vulnerability, which is that vulnerability is your biggest form of courage.
Yeah, I know. She's as good as old Claudia, isn't she? She's fantastic.
The vulnerability is about being you.
Yeah.
It's about okay being you in front of others.
Yeah.
That is really what it's about. And yeah, and so again, going back to another exercise that we do quite a lot, which is we ask the question, what skills and qualities might somebody with lived experience of mental ill health be bringing to the workplace? And so...
Nah, that's powerful.
It's very powerful. Yeah. It's very powerful. And you get this wonderful list of, you know, understanding and knowledge and empathy and courageousness and stories to share and, just a whole, and what often people don't put on there is vulnerability, and I will add it on and say, and this is one that we love because this is about showing up and being okay to be
human.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But doesn't that give people then the permission to expose their own vulnerabilities? You know, if I was going to a workplace and say, well, I do now. You know, I really struggle with mental health, and it's been with me all my life, and this is the way it affects me. I didn't have the opportunity to speak about it when it was happening, but I'd like to do it now and try and get people to do it. But that's me coming from the outside. It needs somebody on the inside in a position of responsibility that openly admits their vulnerabilities.
Absolutely.
But in a competitive career capitalist environment, white, male dominated, that's not easy to break through, is it?
It's not always easy to break through. And what we have found over time is that actually for somebody to talk about their personal story can be a very vulnerable experience. So as a result, we think it's better for an organisation to be quite far on that journey to create a mentally healthy culture. So you have more understanding, knowledge across the organisation before the chief exec stands up and says,
I struggle.
I struggle with anxiety and depression or whatever it is. Because what we've seen in the past as well, maybe I mentioned this to you before, but so a friend of ours used to work for a large bank, and he had struggled with his mental health, and they said, would you go on camera? And he said, sure, he'd go on camera. So he went on camera, and this was before the bank had really started to do, you know, across the board learning and development, understanding, da 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 da. And he went into the bank the next day, and there he was from floor to ceiling on this massive screen talking about his mental health, and he just
It's not good for his mental health. It's not a good way to handle it. Jesus.
No, because he just thought, oh my gosh, you know, what have I done?
And then people are starting to stare at him, and
well,
people will
maybe not stare, but you know, they'll be asking questions, or they might, you know, and it was just that it was a step too far because the organisation wasn't at a place yet that would support him along that.
Yeah.
So I'm all for people sharing their stories when the organisation is ready for it, if you like.
It's the psychological safety that we talked about earlier.
Exactly. Yeah. There has to be sort of trust across the board, lack of fear, understanding where it's, we talk about demystifying mental ill health.
Are we making progress towards that? I sense we are, but I still sense we've got a hell of a long way to go.
We do have a long way to go, but we're definitely a lot further on. So we talk about organisations going on a journey, zero, little action and awareness. Stage one, senior leaders, stakeholders are on board. Stage two, the people managers, people leaders are on board. Stage three, whole organisation. Stage four, utopia. Yeah, world class.
Yeah.
And it's an ongoing journey. And now, when I started working in this area, you know, way back when I was creating full pieces of interactive theatre, you would say to organisations, so you know, what are you doing at the moment in this area? Oh well, we have fruit bowls.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing. It's a start.
Absolutely. It's a start. Oh, we do stuff for charity. Great.
Yes, we all go on a walk, you know, on Sunday mornings to raise money. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I'm not dissing fruit bowls and doing stuff for charity.
No.
Absolutely not. But it's only part of it.
If you think back to that
promote, support, protect, it's a little bit in
prevent.
The promote.
Don't forget prevent.
Yeah, prevent, protect, yeah. It's a little bit in promote though, isn't it?
Yes.
It's not totally in promote. Yeah, it's not gonna cut it if you want to create a mentally healthy culture.
Now there's one thing I think when we spoke a little while ago about, which is the bit that I'm really interested in, which is about PLC boards.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I sense that you don't do work at PLC level. You work at very senior levels, but not at PLC. And the pressures at PLC level are very different. And it's always behind closed doors, and sometimes the behaviour is frankly appalling, which I've experienced myself. So how do you think you can crack through that, and what needs to be done there? Do you think it's the same as you're doing with any other senior group? I guess it is, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. It's about if we can get in at that senior level, it's about saying to that senior team, we want to work with. And we've said that several times, actually, to different organisations. We'd love to work with the board.
And what do they say?
It hasn't happened so far. But
How long have you been asking?
Oh, quite a long time.
Oh, that's terrible.
But you
because that
you
basically
see,
says that, so, I'm sorry, the organisation is going in one direction and the board are not interested. Mm-hmm. So therefore, why as somebody like me who would present to the board, why would I be interested in all the mental health stuff that's going on?
There is a disconnect. We tend to do some digging around the organisations in terms of what's out there before we go in and do the piece with the senior team, as in digging, just as in let's find out a bit more about this organisation.
Yeah, yeah.
So we worked with a construction company. Recently we did a piece with them, and they have they're owned by private equity, and we looked into that private equity firm, and some of their other businesses are winning awards for what they're doing with wellbeing.
Okay. What about them, though?
Well, what about them? I don't know. But the good thing was, from that, we could at least say to this organisation, look, your owners are doing this already. You have permission to do this.
My experience of private equity is the complete opposite of that. They are literally, you know, they have a purpose in life, which is fine. You know, they buy an organisation, rinse it, make it look fabulous and a bit of window dressing and sell it for a profit. And in a way, they sort of don't care who they tread on, you know. And I did work for a private equity when I was at La Senza many years ago, and I guess they've changed now, but they were absolutely awful. You know, they didn't give a toss about anybody's health or well-being. It's all about numbers and financial delivery, you know, and profitability. And when you get that going down through the chief exec, as we said earlier, you know, it's really hard for that chief exec to accept all of that and then change the way that they behave with down the line.
And all we can do is keep saying, you know, all we can do is keep knocking on the door and say we'd like to work with them. How can you help us to work with them? How can you let us in? Who would
but
be interested?
A lot of them don't, do they? They don't. I mean, they don't have, they don't even have HR representation in the main at board level. So how can you call out somebody's behaviour, or how can somebody in an HR type function call out bad behaviour? You know, if I was to call out bad behaviour in a board meeting, well, I mean, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't feel brave enough to do it, actually.
I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's that thing of, well, because you don't feel safe, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah,
it's
yes,
not psychologically
right.
safe
no,
to
no,
do so.
No.
On the other hand, it'd be interesting to see if you did call it out, how many other people say, yeah, I agree with what Chaz is saying. I'm not happy with that.
Yeah, they may well do.
It's interesting, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes, but they don't have the courage to do it. And it's the other non-execs, if I can call them that, that should be calling it out in the first place, because they're on a level par with the person who's behaving badly. Yeah. You know, they don't do it. They just don't do it. They sit, well, they did when I was there. They sat there in silence. You know, it's appalling, really.
Yeah, that's it's unacceptable.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
It is unacceptable.
There was one thing. We talked about kindness.
We right? did.
With Claudia. And I just remembered this from the same literature festival. There was somebody talking about awe, you know, a feeling of awe, a sense of awe and wonder. And because you asked me a bit, you know, what do I do in order to help my mental health? And one of the things on the Michael Mosley, just one thing, is count your blessings, right? So I used to do this every day. I could get three blessings, and I just used to stick down whatever I could think of. And I wasn't really doing it from my heart. Yeah. So I saw this session, and there's a book about finding awe. And it transformed the way I thought about things. And, you know when you see a painting and it takes your breath away, or a building, you think, my God, that's, you know, absolutely unbelievable. That feeling that you get is just like being kind, actually. It's a very similar feeling. And you just walk away in disbelief and awe and wonder. And it just makes you feel really, really good. So, you know,
it's about noticing, isn't it? It's about being in the moment, because you're just completely engaged, enwrapped with whatever it is.
Yes, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, because you have to be in the moment to be able to notice it.
Yeah.
You know, like where you come from in Scotland. I mean, some of the scenery up there is gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I've not been to some of the gorgeous scenery bits. I've been to Scotland a lot, but not the right bits. Mostly pubs and bars when I was working in a whiskey industry. But you see the pictures on the telly, and it's just stunning, you know. And it does take your breath away.
Yeah.
Anything else? I mean, what else could you want to say about Head Torch? We can get in contact with you, obviously. Through the website.
Yes.
And
www.headtorch.org.
.org, it's a .org, right, org, okay. Yeah. I better write that down, hadn't I? Otherwise I shall forget it.
We work anywhere and everywhere, nationally, globally.
Oh, do you? Do internationally as well?
Yeah.
Oh, very good. Yeah. How do you deal with the cultural differences then?
That, again, is a deep dive conversation to make sure that we're getting that right.
Language is a problem, though, can it be?
Can be, yeah. We've delivered in French.
Have you?
Anything's possible, yeah.
Japan?
Sadly, not me, but I am learning French, but I'm not good enough.
Yeah,
I
lived in Japan for a little while, and I'm threatening now to learn Japanese because I didn't really make a good go of it when I was there.
Yeah,
because it was too easy to slip into English.
Yeah, yeah.
And they could just about, and you could just about get yourself made, heard, and understood. But the culture there is so, so different. I'd be really interested if you did something out there.
Yeah, I know. I'd love to. I mean, we are working with a large Japanese manufacturing company at the moment.
But in the UK?
In the UK, yes. We haven't quite made it to Japan, but you know.
Oh, you should.
You never know.
Try it. If you go, let me know and I'll come with you.
Yeah,
wonderful. I would love to go back there again. It's the best country I've ever been to.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
We've got one of our programs is a sort of online introduction to workplace mental health. So it's just a half hour. It's really like watching a television program. We've got a bit of drama in it and lots of interviews of people from all different levels who have had experience of mental ill health and how to have a conversation and so on. It's compact and there's a few questions here and there. And what we offer organisations is the ability to top and tail it. So we'll have, say, the chief exec and maybe a union rep, say, or head of wellbeing at the top saying, this is why we want you to do this. This is why it's important. Enjoy. And then at the end, they pop up again saying, hope you've enjoyed it. Go away and embed it. And we film on their premises, you know.
Yeah.
So we did that for this organisation. And
with Japanese leaders.
Yeah, we had the head of operations who's British, and we had the president who is Japanese. So it's just lovely. So they were both talking, and at the beginning and the end. But it's nice because it just kind of embeds it. It just says, yeah, okay, the top folks say this is important, so I better listen up.
But that is it, isn't it? It's about getting that sponsorship from the very, very, very top.
Yeah.
And, so, you know, you've got a choice. That employees have a choice then. Yeah. They either say, yes, I'm going to do this, or they go somewhere where they find it's more comfortable for them for whatever reason. It might be more uncomfortable, actually, ironically.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Amy, look, it's been absolutely fantastic.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. No, I've really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think we've covered quite a lot, actually. It's interesting because I have similar conversations with most people.
Yeah.
But there's always a little couple of nuggets that come out that I think, I've not thought of it like that before. And the one I think I'm probably going to remember is the prevent, obviously my prevent, clearly, because that's very important. Mm. But it was the people going up and being kind and nice to people at work just when they think, you know, just saying, just you only need about three or four words, don't you?
Yeah.
Say, are you okay? You know, that's it. Or, you reacted badly in there or something. You know, no, actually, that's not very good. That's not the right way of saying it at all. But I've got a little list of all of these things that I just think are fantastic. So thank you once again.
Thank you very
much.
It's
wish
been a pleasure.
All the very best.
Thank you.
And bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.